You're listening to Work in Progress. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, Editor-in-Chief of Working Nation. Work in Progress explores the rapidly changing workplace through conversations with innovators, educators, and decision-makers, people with solutions to today's workforce challenges. Welcome to Work in Progress. My guest today is Dr. Angela Jackson, partner at New Profit, where she leads the future of work investments and strategy. Angela, thank you so much for joining.
Oh, thank you for having me, Ramona. I'm really excited to be on the show today.
You have a new project, or relatively new project, to help put people back to work and help them get trained. Future of Work Grand Challenge with XPRIZE and MIT Solve. Give us a little background on what that is and how it came about and what you're trying to do there.
With New Profit, you know, I'm currently leading this $15 million Future of Work Global Fund. And really the spirit behind it is to invest in entrepreneurs and companies who are developing innovative technologies and solutions to upskill workers who are experiencing low wages and workers who are at the entry level. And really what the genesis of the project was, New Profit is a venture philanthropy firm. We've been around for about 20 years investing in social entrepreneurs who are thinking about how to break down barriers between people and opportunities in this country. And when I joined New Profit 2 years ago and talking about the future of work, I have to say it was really an upskill, upmarket conversation. As you know, a lot of people were thinking about, well, what do we do about, you know, middle level or executives with automation. And I didn't hear a lot of people talking about what was going to happen to people who were going to be disproportionately impacted. And so when I looked at the research at Brookings and McKinsey, you know, I saw that people by race, Black, Latinx, Indigenous people by their socioeconomic backgrounds were going to be disproportionately impacted by the future of work. So as a philanthropy, we thought that's where we should be directing our resources, our dollars, our attention. And so we came up with this idea around the Future of Work Grand Challenge to actually incentivize entrepreneurs and innovators who may have been thinking about how to automate people out of work, but to incentivize them to think about how do you use technology to help keep people in their jobs, to upskill them in more rapid ways, and to provide wraparound supports so that they can not only stay in their jobs, but they can grow in their jobs. So in June, we launched the $6 million challenge, and it's partnered, it's powered by what you mentioned, XPRIZE and MIT. And the goal behind it is to design an initiative to rapidly reskill 25,000 displaced workers who've been impacted by COVID. So the idea is like, how do we get these people back to work quickly?
Can I interrupt you and ask you this question here? What are you looking for to fund? Is it a project or are you looking for people to start new businesses?
Yeah, so there's two parts to the challenge. So with XPRIZE, we have the Rapid Reskilling XPRIZE. And really what that is positioned to do is to think about innovators who are thinking about helping workers who've been disinvested in progress and have mobility. So reducing the time it takes to train and land higher wage jobs. So with this competition, we're trying to surface innovations and innovators who are thinking about how do we exponentially decrease the time to train people for jobs of the future. So that's one piece of it. And then the second piece of it with MIT Solves is about the reimagining pathways to employment. And what that's thinking about is once a person's upskilled, and you hear a lot of people who will go to job boot camps or they'll do a coding training, once you have the skills, we're looking for entrepreneurs, organizations out there who are thinking about how do we help workers assess their skills, find high growth jobs, get matched, and get placement supports.
How do you determine who the winner of this is, the winners? I believe there's multiple awards being presented.
Right. So when we launched the competition in June 22nd, to date, we've received 600 submissions, and we think that we'll get many more of those before the competition closes in November. In November, we'll have a panel of judges. And so what's interesting about this panel is that you'll have academics, you'll have investors. But one thing that we've done at New Profit where we feel really passionate about is like centering worker voice. So we're actually going to have workers help judge these solutions and sit on a panel and let us know which solutions would work best for their lives. And then the next phase of that, we'll select 15 solutions that we're actually going to validate in local communities through partnerships with workforce boards and job centers. And so that's how we're going to get to the 25,000 number, is that we're going to go to 5 different communities, take these innovations that we think have promise, and see how successful they are with actually getting people trained in less time, less cost, and placed in jobs with living wages and benefits.
How do you think the education to employment path has to be changed?
I think one thing that we know about, and I say this a lot, you know, the future of work has become the present of work. We know that learning is going to be the constant. It is right now. It is going to be into the future. So it really is about having a digital resilience, being able to learn new skills. And if you think about a lot of working adults, you know, Opportunity at Work did research with Accenture, and they identified that there's 71 million Americans out there that have the skills to do higher wage jobs and have the interest. They just haven't been given the opportunity. So when we think about those Americans without maybe a bachelor's degree, post-COVID, people just don't have the time, if they're thinking about a career transition, to stop and go back and get a 4-year degree. So we Absolutely. Need opportunities for people to rapidly upskill in their communities and doing it on their own time and in their own ways. And we've seen that again with COVID, with the job centers and workforce boards that we work with, and social distancing. A lot of people have lost jobs in the travel, tourism, and restaurant industries. And by all accounts, many of those jobs are not coming back, right, Ramona? So we've got workers who are at home thinking, I've got to pay my rent next month. I've got to feed my kids. And I need to think about what I'm going to do next, because that job's probably not coming back. And so really, when we thought about this Future Work Grand Challenge, we had that person in mind. You know, maybe a mom, maybe a dad. They're trying to think about, again, keep their household afloat. But again, they're open to learning new skills. So the question is, which skills should they learn? What are the adjacencies to the skills that they've already built a career in? Like, if you've worked 15 years in customer service, what could be some adjacencies in a what we call a future skill or a future sector that might make sense to you, that you can make that leap? And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for innovators who are thinking about these jobs of the future. And basically, how do we help people do that translation work? One is let them know that these fields exist and there are adjacencies, right, without you going back having to get a 4-year degree. And that two, that we're actually giving people the wraparound support to help them think about what's that next step in their career.
We just finished a Working Nation American Workers Survey, and we talked to a lot of adult workers, different demographics, different pay scale. And we found out that about 2/3 of them don't believe they have the skills for now, let alone in the future. But what was really fascinating to me is that they didn't even know there were opportunities out there. And I often wonder, you know, people are talking about it more, but how do we get the word out? How do we get this ingrained into people's thinking that there are opportunities out there for them?
It's interesting that you found that research. We've actually found similar research when we stood up this worker advisory board. We have actual workers, as I mentioned, that have been impacted by COVID, and they're representative of the United States. You know, a lot of them don't have a 4-year degree. A lot of them, again, all of them have lost their jobs due to COVID. And that's what they told us too. While they're inspired and they're ready to learn, they doubt themselves. So they don't have a way to assess the skills that they already have, right? And two, they don't have a coach, a mentor, someone having them think through, again, what could these future opportunities be? So taking that insight, this is the reason why we decided with this initiative that surfacing solutions, that wasn't enough, right? There's tons of solutions. And I think that's the power of the internet, that you can pick a coding boot camp, manufacturing, goes on and on and on. Right? But one is that's dependent on the person, the job seeker, going on the internet and finding it, right? It's also dependent on the job seeker to validate and say, is this the appropriate training? Is it even good? So what we try to do is flip that. And what we did was, one, with surfacing the solutions, we're going to have them validated. But two, and I think the most important part is this initiative where we're actually partnering with these workforce boards and job centers, because we're taking the solutions to the community. So pre-COVID in 2019, workforce boards served 1 in 12 Americans. 1 in 12 went there for upskilling opportunities. They went there for career navigation advice. And so when we think about that, it really feels like it behooves us to make sure those centers where people can walk to, take a bike to, that's, again, in their neighborhoods, have the most updated training, updated information, and actually are being our ambassadors for these jobs of the future. And so we're investing there in 5 different communities in a project that we're talking about modernizing job centers and modernizing American workforce boards so that we can really address this asymmetry of information that exists. That's, you know, really preventing people from opportunities for higher wages and really peace of mind.
I think one of the key parts of this is the employer themselves and how they signal what they need in a job.
You know, and a lot of times employers, and we've talked, you know, I talk about this a lot, right? And we know that employers hire for credentials. They hire based on a resume. And that's an easy way out, right? It is harder to think about how do we assess people's skills. So one thing I've been appreciative of organizations, and I'll name one for you, like AT&T, you know, when I was talking to a colleague that works on philanthropy there, they said the average tenure of their employee is about 20 years. And so when they think about how automation will impact their business model, they know that a lot of the employees that work there now may not have the skills today to take some of those jobs. But with some foresight, with some investment in training, right, that they can actually invest in these employees, the ones that have these longer tenures, to be prepared to take on these jobs for the future. And their theory is by taking a longer term employee, like 20 years, you're getting an employee that's invested in the organization, that's willing. And so as an employer, why wouldn't they invest in them? And so with employers, we need them to think about how do you invest, one, in the employees you have. And I've heard this again from like Marriott. That's another example of an organization that's thinking about investing in their current employee base. So one, how do you invest in them? And then two, how do we begin using other credentials besides degrees as proxies? You know, when I talk to our workers who are in our frontline advisory boards, they say, you know, people say that they're not going to use degrees, but then they do. We get there and we fill out the application and they do. And they're so frustrated because they're, you know, we had one gentleman who was like, I've worked in this field for 15 years. Okay, I didn't do a degree. I didn't get a degree, but I can do the job. I've been doing the job. So with employers, we have to push employers, you know, the HR functions, to be more proactive in looking at ways. There's new technologies coming out. And again, that's why we launched this Pathways to Employment, because we also want to surface innovators, entrepreneurs who are thinking about new and improved ways to validate existing skills.
You know, one of the things to work now, you need access a lot of times to computers. There's a lot of us who can work from home. We're doing this podcast via both our computers and a good broadband system, broadband connection. So there's a lot of gaps there with people. I think the number was 14 million around the country, and the majority of them in urban areas that don't have access to a computer. Is there part of your prize that's going to be looking at that?
Absolutely. And those are part of the organizations that we're investing in. So, you know, one entrepreneur I love to highlight is Ruben Harris at Career Karma.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed him. I love him.
Yeah. So he's, you know, pushing an initiative now where he is, you know, supplying laptops to the people in his boot camps and raising money for laptops. Because, you know, one is the technologies, right? It's the internet. That's one piece of it. And we think about how many people don't have internet at this point. I mean, it's still 19 million Americans don't have access to internet. One is just like the broadband service, but two is just it's cost prohibitive. You know, I think about when I started working at home, our internet cost $100 per month. But when I was on the internet, my stepdaughter's on the internet, my husband's on the internet, we had to get business internet. It's $230 a month. Who can afford that, right? A regular person. And Ramona, I think about this a lot because I was raised by my grandparents. You know, my grandfather worked at a factory, a Chrysler factory. My grandmother was a home health aide, and they worked every day so that I could, you know, go to school, go on to college, get an advanced degree. But when you think about that situation now, parents, what they're faced with when you are at home in COVID and now there's remote learning, you're in a situation where if you have two or three kids, everyone needs a computer and they need to be on the computer at the same time. And so it broke my heart just recently when I saw two kids doing remote school and working from a local Taco Bell, right? And it really starts early that we've got to solve this problem. And then the other piece of it is about that kind of hard tech. You've got a lot of adults who are accessing the internet from their mobile phones, right? So they're missing a lot of the richness that you would get from having the hardware and the broadband service.
Yeah, I've seen photos of kids in a parking lot outside a library so they could access the internet so they could do their homework. And that's such a big gap that needs to be solved. So when you talk about credentials and you talked about businesses, and, you know, they're still looking for the degrees. They're what's the right word? They're dismissing those learned at work, learned at the job skills. I'm trying to figure out still. I mean, we talk about this all the time at Working Nation. How do we get that? How do we level that playing field? There's great programs like you mentioned, or great nonprofits like Opportunity at Work that's trying to change the narrative. But I think it's ingrained in people because we've all said you got to have a degree to be successful.
I agree, but I'm seeing a shift. And we always knew that employers were going to have to lead there because over the years, there have been several initiatives about, okay, let's, you know, ban the degree, let's, you know, hire differently, skills-based hiring. But really, that doesn't happen until you have leading employers who are willing to make that shift and have that narrative change. And so recently, if you look at the initiatives through Facebook and through Google now, using their certificates and their CEO making a commitment to actually hire people who've obtained those certificates, that's significant. Because it's one thing about having a Facebook or Google offer certificates. You know, the question always remains, who's going to actually accept that, right? And so when Google starts accepting those certificates, when you look at Salesforce, when you're a certified Salesforce database officer, like when people begin to recognize those, they become transferable. And that is significant. And I think the more that you see this with larger companies, that is going to help. I think too is what's happening in higher education now with everything going remote. I mean, we have fast forwarded 10 to 20 years, right? That digital revolution we thought was going to happen is happening right now. So people are rethinking, you know, what does it mean to have a residential program? What is the value add? Or is there another way that you can learn the same material, again, with less cost and less time? And I think you're going to see a sea change in terms of the certificates that come out. The more that you have the Googles, the Facebooks, the Salesforce, who are saying that they're going to do things a different way, you're going to see other people come on board.
You have two goals, it seems, in this Future of Work Grand Challenge. One is to rapidly reskill thousands of displaced workers in higher wage jobs, right, in the next 24 months. But I think you have a broader idea that 12 million Americans from underserved, underinvested communities will find some success in the workplace by 2025. tell me your optimism about it. How do you think you're going to get it done?
Well, one is that key lever, and I talk about it a lot. I call workforce boards and job centers a best kept secret. Right now, they're WIOA funded. They're quasi-government entity, right? Again, they're where everyone lives. So if you think about the community college or you think about other training facilities, people have these job centers in their areas. If we are able to transform how these job centers are incentivized, how they place people, and what training they offer, we could have that change happen literally, you know, in the next 5 to 6 years. And let me say that because right now, when you think about job centers and workforce boards, they're incentivized to place people in jobs. It's not place people in jobs with living wages. It's not place people in future-proof jobs, you know, jobs that are not estimated to be automated in 3 to 5 years. So while our bigger goal is to place 25,000 people, I think our really bold and audacious goal is to transform these job centers and workforce boards in the way they think about placement and training. And it's already started to happen with COVID and social distancing. When I started working on this project 2 years ago, I'd call and I talked to about 60 workforce boards just to better understand how they were working. And one thing that happened because of COVID is that with social distancing, they had to begin thinking about how they use technology and reach people in new ways because they had exponential the amount of interest, people who are knocking on their doors wanting training. And so you have like this body of willing people who now have this problem that can be solved through technology, which becomes an opportunity because the jobs of the future are going to be digital. We need people who have digital literacy. We need people to be trained to have, you know, digital resiliency. And that's going to be the game changer. But being able to do it in your neighborhood, taking down the barriers and giving people better information, like that gives me optimism. I know that we can have a change. And, you know, and I'll tell you, you said, you know, we have Ruben in common with Career Karma. You know, I had a conversation with him about workforce boards. He's an entrepreneur. He went out and found a local one and he just launched a program in Washington State with a local board where he's, you know, they're providing laptops and access to Career Karma. So that's one board right there that, again, most entrepreneurs hadn't even thought about, right? Because they seem so cumbersome. How do you get a contract? So trying to demystify, you know, this entity where a majority of Americans, a lot of Americans are getting their training is going to be a key as a lever for change.
Thinking differently always, always leads to solutions. Angela, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, Ramona, thank you.
My guest today has been Dr. Angela Jackson, partner at New Profit. I'm Ramona Schindelheim, editor-in-chief of Working Nation. Thank you for listening.